You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
June the 8th, 2020, a new survey out. Question for you. Do you think our country is out of control? This is an NBC News, Wall Street Journal poll. When it comes to the country these days, do you generally feel that things in the country are out of control? 80% said yes. You think things are under control? 15% said yes to that, under control. The poll indicating 46% of the voters believe the current state of the economy was poor. 59% of voters more concerned with the actions of police following George Floyd's death, than they have been with protests that have turned violent. Only 27% of the voters were concerned about the protests that have turned violent. That's a writing on the wall we need to be aware of, that, again, we're willing to accept riots and arsons and looting. I would imagine some of those businesses that were burned out and may never reopen, were already having trouble, that they would have an opinion on that would say, no, I definitely think that's a big deal. And, of course, the efforts underway to try to defund police. Democrats moving forward with legislation they say will crack down on police brutality and recording patterns of misuse of force across the country. It's being led by the Congressional Black Caucus. In fact, Senator Cory Booker, New Jersey, one of those sponsoring it in the Senate, said this is a powerful moment and movement that has made legislation like this that was probably impossible to do a month ago now possible. The White House also considering that President Trump will make a speech to the nation on race and unity. Would that be effective? Would it be mocked? Would he be criticized before he even begins to speak? And even if he says we need to cease and desist and everybody come together, what do you think would be the reaction? I think you know that those who are against Trump, there is nothing he can say that's going to make it better in their opinion. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio says, I'm ready to cut funding for the New York City Police Department, already acknowledging that he's going to cut some of the budget. He's going to give specifics before the July 1st budget deadline. The New York Police Department currently $6 billion annual budget. They've got close to 40,000 officers. But he says, I've seen things in the street that tell me we need to cut police funding. And we want to take that and put it into youth and social services. I have no problem with them supporting such youth and social services, but at the cost of taking money out of police, is that really going to make your community safer? Former New York City Police Commissioner Bernard Kerik says already at least 600 officers he has heard are considering leaving their jobs because they're not getting support and they know that it's going to get worse. And what has happened in New York City in particular over all of this in a week-long period from Monday to last night? 13 murders compared to 5 the same time last year. 40 shootings. Again, that's a substantial increase because either police cannot get to the scene or no one's bothering to call them. In other news, oral argument set to take place sometime this week. U.S. District Court Judge Emmett Sullivan going to have to explain why he has not signed off on the Justice Department motion to dismiss the case against former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. I cannot wait to hear that decision and his remarks. President Trump is considering pulling 9,500 troops out of Germany. We have something like 34,000 troops in that country. He says, I'm going to take about 10,000 out of the country, and already the Germans are saying, that's not going to be good. Tropical storm Cristobal making landfall on the Louisiana coast. High winds, rain, some flooding. It's going to get worse for some of those areas. In some areas, they could have up to 12 inches of rain or more, and it's going to make its way up through the Midwest, hitting a lot of the Midwest, probably the St. Louis area by Tuesday. Of course, it will be downgraded considerably from a tropical storm, but it's still going to be a nasty situation. The weather will maybe dampen some future protest. And it's a shame to some extent, maybe we didn't have it earlier, that would have cut down some of the rioting and looting. But right now, let's just be thankful for some peaceful protests that we've seen. Thank you.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
COVID-19 is a new health concern, but Wellington Environmental has 30 years experience to make your company and environment safe. Wellington Environmental can give you peace of mind, and the cost is very reasonable. These days, you can't take a chance that customers, employees, your family would be exposed to COVID-19. You have to be proactive. That starts by calling Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. You'll quickly see why customers have relied on Wellington Environmental for decades. COVID-19 can survive for hours on your furniture, your computers, your equipment, and every time someone touches that surface, they could be exposed. You don't want that liability. Call Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality, lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Oh, oh, Lord, why have you forsaken me? Got me down in Mississippi where I don't want to be.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
The New York Times editorial page editor and owner defended it in public statements, but then they totally surrendered to a woke child mob from their own newsroom that apparently gets triggered if they're presented with any opinion contrary to their own, as opposed to telling the woke children in their newsroom, this is the workplace, not a social justice seminar on campus.
The words of Senator Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, reference the New York Times op-ed that was printed the other day. And boy, did it hit the fan. The senator said, I went through all the checks that I had previously. I've had a couple, three other pieces in the op-ed. And yeah, there's a lot of fact-checking and things going back and forth and drafting, sometimes just changing words or whatever. But it obviously got fully vetted before it was printed, and it's an op-ed. It's an op-ed. It's an opinion piece. You might think, do you have to check everyone's fact on an opinion piece? Well, if they say something outlandish, yes, you do. But if there's an opinion about something and it's not really tied to facts, I can refute it on basis of fact. It's their opinion. Just because you don't like someone's opinion doesn't mean it's wrong. It is their opinion. Keep in mind, when that op-ed was presented to the New York Times, and going through all of that, and again being cleared to go into the paper, and the backlash started at that point from some of the, as he is referred to, the child mob living and operating inside the New York Times, not real journalists, but the child mob. Well, then the backtrack. Well, first they didn't backtrack. At first they defended it and said, we did everything right. We did it proper. But then over the weekend, the fallout continued. The fallout continued as the one of the editors of the paper, the editorial page editor, resigned. He resigned, and his deputy was reassigned at the paper. This is even after the publisher had stood with the editor, the editorial page editor, last week, saying, "We did everything right." But as the pressure continued, the publisher accepted the resignation. You have to ask what was going on behind the scenes for the resignation. But the publisher issued a statement saying, "I've been grateful for the changes that the editor has made for us, James Bennett, and made to our opinion pages, including broadening the range of voices." But apparently a conservative voice speaking out in New York Times, not acceptable. The other thing about that article, before we break it down more, is that when it appeared in the paper, it was titled, basically with Senator Cotton's name with it, basically, "Bring in the Troops," which was a misleading headline. He was not saying bring in the troops. He said, if we cannot get control in the communities where it's needed, then we need to consider use of the Insurrection Act, and the president needs to consider it. Wasn't flat out saying bring in the troops. But the headline itself was just wrong in the view of some of those inside the New York Times. And in fact, they started saying, "You have now made it dangerous to be a black staffer of the New York Times." So then as Bennett decides to step aside, now the publisher says, "Well, yeah, we concluded that James Bennett would not be able to lead the team to the next leg of change required because there's too much noise around all of this." In other words, they shoved him not only under the bus, they tied him to the railroad track, and after the train went through, and then they ran the bus over it. And one of those speaking out, appearing on CNN, and of course, on reliable sources, the supposed Brian Stetzer piece, where they actually look at news in an unbiased way, which they never do anyway, but act like it. They had New York Times staff writer Nicole Hannah Jones. And she was giving her opinion of what took place and what has happened as a result of it. I'm going to let you hear it in its entirety. It's just around 2 minutes. They're going to break it down for you because you'll probably make some notes if you're in a position where you can. As you listen to her, you think, what did she? Well, we're going to break it down for you after you hear the whole thing. Here we go.
Let me just say that the New York Times journalists who oppose this column love the institution of the New York Times intensely and also care deeply about journalism. What was the main issue was that you have a U.S. senator in the party of power saying that he wants to use the military to suppress dissent, not going through the normal fact-checking process that anyone making such claims should go through, and making, you know, assertions that our own reporters had discredited through their reporting. And that was the main concern. But I think what happened is a larger symptom that we're seeing in news organizations across the country, which is they are really struggling to cover in a way that appears to be nonpartisan, a kind of political landscape where one political party has in many ways gone rogue and is not following the rules. But there's a sense if you just cover that straight down the line, you will look like you are picking sides. And so this adherence to even-handedness, both-sidism, the view from nowhere, doesn't actually work in the political circumstances that we're in. And what a lot of people said is that, you know, it is fine. We, as a news organization, must air the opinion of someone like Senator Tom Cotton, but in a news article where we can check the facts, where we can push back, that you don't just hand over your platform to someone that powerful, making assertions that might have been unconstitutional, and most certainly some of them were not accurate. So it is not just the New York Times. News organizations have really been struggling with how do you cover where we are politically without always having to get those calls that somehow the coverage is in opposition to the Republican Party, as opposed to just covering what is happening.
Wow. There's a lot of stuff in there, right? A lot. And Brian Stetzer, the only thing I heard from him was, You're not going to try to break it down and look at it as a true journalist and examine it. By the way, Senator Cotton said, they've yet to point out any factual mistake inside my op-ed. And again, they cleared it. After 2-3 rewrites, they cleared it. So there was no issue about facts. I'll break it down in more detail with her in a moment, but again, the senator has acknowledged all of this has been an issue simply because he's speaking as a conservative. No facts whatsoever that were distorted or wrong by his statement. Despite the headline reading, "Send in the troops," which now the editor admits, yeah, that headline was incendiary and should not have been used. Oh, now you say, but when you put it up there, did you want it to look like it was Tom Cotton calling for sending in the troops without some kind of basis and without some kind of explanation? His essay referred to left-wing radicals like Antifa infiltrating protest marches to exploit the death of George Floyd. And they want to say, well, there's been little evidence of Antifa's involvement. That's not true. That's not true if you look at any of the police reports and the other actions. And yet, Antifa has been on the scene, clearly making it evident that they were there and involved. All right, let's begin to break down this full line of BS from New York Times writer Nicole Hannah Jones. Let's begin with what her statement is, and this beginning statement sets the stage for everything. She wants you to believe that the staff of the New York Times is actually concerned about journalism.
Let me just say that the New York Times journalists who oppose this column love the institution of the New York Times intensely and also care deeply about journalism. What was the main issue was that you have a U.S. senator in the party of power saying that he wants to use the military to suppress dissent, not going through the normal fact-checking process that anyone making such claims should go through, and making, you know, assertions that our own reporters had discredited through their reporting. And that was the main concern.
Well, if you review what the article said, Hannah Jones, he didn't say using the army to suppress dissent. He was talking about rioting, looting, arson if the locals cannot handle it. Rioting, not protest. Arson, not protest. Dissent. I guess you could put the rioting into that column, but he was talking about that kind of activity. Arson, looting, maiming, attacking police, not peaceful protest. There's no reason to have army troops out in the street if folks are peacefully protesting. That's the job of the police department if folks are peaceful. And if it gets out of control, if the local department handles it properly, then you don't need the Insurrection Act. And the New York Times journalist concerned about journalism and facts. Yeah, right. But let's go again back to her statement, because she says this is a whole issue of factual reporting.
I think what happened is a larger symptom that we're seeing in news organizations across the country, which is they are really struggling to cover in a way that appears to be nonpartisan, a kind of political landscape where one political party has in many ways gone rogue and is not following the rules. But there's a sense if you just cover that straight down the line, you will look like you are picking sides. And so this adherence to even-handedness, both-sidism, the view from nowhere, doesn't actually work in the political circumstances that we're in.
So she wants to say the senator is speaking from a position of power and going, the other party went rogue. That's a commentary on her part. And if she's trying to be even-handed, that's wrong. But she says you can't be even-handed. That's what her point was. This adherence to even-handedness, both-sidism, the view from nowhere doesn't actually work in the political circumstance we're in. In other words, you can't be fair. You got to be telling the slanted story. And the reaction she got from her host was, I kind of agree, And then she wants you to believe real news organizations are struggling to deal with facts.
we as a news organization must air the opinion of someone like Senator Tom Cotton, but in a news article where we can check the facts, where we can push back, that you don't just hand over your platform to someone that powerful making assertions that might have been unconstitutional, and most certainly some of them were not accurate.
So what was not accurate? What was unconstitutional? Did Brian Stetler do his job and ask? Give me an example. Give me one. He just let her fly on by that she wants to say he was inaccurate and maybe unconstitutional. If she's talking about bringing in the Insurrection Act, that's not unconstitutional. The Insurrection Act was used to a great extent during the Civil Rights era. During the Civil Rights era. To bring peace and actually get children into the schools. And yet she still says news organizations are confused.
It is not just the New York Times. News organizations have really been struggling with how do you cover where we are politically without always having to get those calls that somehow the coverage is in opposition to the Republican Party, as opposed to just covering what is happening.
Well, probably because you're not just covering what is happening, you're covering it with a slant. News organizations, real news organizations, real news reporters should not be confused at all. You know when something's slanted. You know when you're deviating from facts and adding your opinion. You just hope the audience doesn't see it. You hope they accept your word as the Bible. Got more to say on this, especially you want to hear her definition. Her definition of what free speech is. You're going to be lectured by a New York Times writer as to what is free speech. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton sponsors this segment. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. I'll see you at Red Fitness Lounge. Get details at redfitnesslounge.com. redfitnesslounge.com.
And they say you don't tug on Superman's cape. You don't spit into the wind. You don't pull a mask off an old Lone Ranger, and you don't mess around with Jim.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
I will say my op-ed didn't meet the time standards. It far exceeded their standards, which is usually sophomoric left-wing drivel. But here's what happened behind the scenes. Last weekend, we saw rioting, looting, really anarchy and insurrection on our streets. In Washington, D.C., 7 days ago, a famous church was torched, memorials were desecrated, stores were looted. And I said simply last Monday that if the local police are overwhelmed by the numbers of these insurrectionists, if they need support from the National Guard, or if necessary as a last resort, federal troops under the Insurrection Act, then that's exactly what has to happen.
The words of Senator Tom Cotton stating exactly what was in his op-ed piece that was cleared, rewritten two or three times to the satisfaction of the New York Times op-ed staff before they printed it. And they stood by it. They stood by it until the backlash started inside their own operation. Mostly, as Senator Cotton says, the mob children inside the New York Times complained that that's offensive. It wasn't properly fact-checked. Yet it was. It was fact-checked. Bennett, the editorial director, did make a mistake because he did admit at one time, I didn't read all of it. I didn't read all of it in advance. Well, that's all they needed to call for his resignation. And, of course, he quickly gave his resignation. And then the paper rescinded its support for the piece. And the publisher said, well, we need to reconsider beefing up fact-checking. There were no facts wrong in this piece. Not one. Not one. No one's pointed out a single fact. But you just accept their word there were mistakes in the facts. And he also said, maybe we should quit publishing opinion pieces, too many from outsiders. That's the whole idea of the op-ed piece. But now Hannah Jones, one of the staff writers in the New York Times, she wants you to know and understand, because you probably don't, what free speech entitles.
Free speech is not that I, as a sitting senator, or I, as someone sitting in my living room, has the right to run my opinions in the New York Times unedited and unchecked. That's not what free speech is. Senator Cotton certainly has the right to write and say whatever he wants in this country. But we, as a news organization, should not be running something that is offering misinformation to the public unchecked. So, yes, we do absolutely believe that his views should be aired, that it is necessary that we know that someone with this power thinks this way. But that's a different thing altogether than simply allowing someone to say things that are not true, to make assertions that might be unconstitutional without a check. Many of us journalists said there should have just been a news article where his views were aired, but in a way that was factual, because we know we are struggling with Americans getting misinformation. And our role as journalists is to give people correct information so they can make decisions.
But you don't. The New York Times does not. And you've yet to cite a fact that was incorrect in the op-ed. And I've got a brilliant idea for you guys. You said he doesn't have the right to be publishing the op-ed. No, he doesn't have a right, but you chose to publish it. You chose to do it. And because you don't like it, then you condemn it. And then you say it should have been a news article. I got an idea for you. Have you considered both? Do the op-ed and also do a news article? Could you consider, what is that too big of a stretch for your small minds at the New York Times? We could actually do a news article, but I know it'd be slanted, but at least you'd do your article as well. Yeah. Update on coronavirus when we continue.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDrurylaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
But look, the New York Times has run editorials by Vladimir Putin, Recep Erdogan, by the Taliban. No problem there. But run one editorial from Tom Cotton that on a position that's supported by 58% of the American people, that we have a duty to protect our citizens' lives and livelihoods. Well, we're going to have to review our processes, and we're going to cut the number of op-eds that we run. A child mob truly is in charge at the New York Times tonight.
The words of Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton last week references op-ed that suddenly came under fire. We played that last week, and I knew he made reference to the Taliban and other pieces, and I just didn't have time to dig it up today. But thanks to my director, Quentin, he said, hey, I know where that is. I can get that to you. And sure enough, he did. So let me go back to that story for a moment, because it's critical. I mean, you just heard the New York Times writer go on and on. We can't let anything go out that's not fact-checked. We can't let somebody just have all their comments published. They don't have a right to do so. And even the publisher who originally agreed and the editorial director Bennett agreed to let the Tom Cotton piece run. When the backlash started, as Cotton says, a child mob in the New York Times, they started backing up. Bennett's out of a job, and now the publisher says, well, we'll do more fact-checking. We won't open the door for just anyone. But they did in the past, and as I said, Quentin pulled it up for me during that break. Thank you, Quentin. We're talking about the New York Times earlier this year did run a piece, publish a Taliban terrorist op-ed. Do you remember that? We'd reported on it at the time. And as a result, several Afghan experts, including a former commanding general of U.S. forces, was outraged that the New York Times would publish the, quote, uncontradicted peace talk musings of a man who's arguably one of the world's most accomplished terrorists. He said it's a disgrace. Went on to say, according to one of those sources that were upset over this, the problem with this op-ed, the New York Times is giving a pretty nasty individual with a track record of terrorism, second to none of anyone else on the planet, this platform. So a U.S. senator cannot express his view in an op-ed piece without them going ballistic, and yet they ran comments by a Taliban leader, retired four-star general, Marine General John Allen said, I agree, I'm well-versed with this terrorist's network. And giving this terror platform, the network that is, the platform of the New York Times, so-called peace plan, a strategic communication coup for their terrorist network. And you know that they were excited. Look, we're the New York Times. And a war correspondent for the New Yorker, not New York Times, New Yorker, who's been reporting from Afghanistan since 88, said about this terrorist, he said, these are people who killed their way to the negotiating table. They terrorized post-Taliban Kabul and Afghanistan. And at that time, the Times editorial page editor, James Bennett, the very one who's now resigned over the Tom Cotton thing, refused to answer questions. They did add a remark that, yeah, we know firsthand how dangerous and destructive the Taliban is. But they were still defending their right to publish his editorial. Now, how many lies you think he told? I would imagine there were several lies and false information, but did we see, as Senator Cotton calls them, the child mob of the New York Times go ballistic and say, why didn't you fact check this guy? Why did you let somebody like that have a piece in our op-ed column? No, but when you get a sitting U.S. senator that says, if we cannot maintain peace in our streets, then maybe we'd need to invoke the Insurrection Act and bring it back. The Times' senior Afghan correspondent was quoted at the time, saying that piece omits the most fundamental fact, that this guy is no Taliban peacemaker as he paints himself, and he's behind some of the most ruthless attacks of this war, with many civilian lives lost. Where was the New York Times writer Nicole Hannah-Jones calling out there? Well, why wasn't that fact check? Why didn't we question that? Why didn't we do an article in addition to giving him, or instead of giving him, an op-ed piece? Quentin, thank you again. I remember the remark from Tom Cotton the other day, but I got tied up on other stuff and I forgot to get back into that. I really appreciate that, because this is critical. This again sets in perspective the lies for the New York Times. And when I'm hearing a New York Times reporter telling me what freedom of the press is, when they don't acknowledge it unless it does them justice, and they want to know why Trump calls out fake news, and journalists get all upset that he's attacking us, he's attacking fake news is what he's attacking. If you're doing your job right, it's the same as police officers. If you're doing your job right, I'm not attacking you, I'm attacking the guys who aren't. Boy, thanks again. I knew that had happened, I just couldn't find it in time. There'll be a little something extra in your paycheck this time around, Quentin. He waves, says, no big deal. Okay, no big deal. Forget I said that. More fake news. All right, I told you, God almighty, I'm so glad you found that. I was absolutely burning over that today, and I got tied up on some other things I had to get together for you. All right, and I was going to tell you about the latest on coronavirus. Well, as we began to open up the nation, we were expecting that there would indeed be some increases in the virus. And I don't mean just being documented, because we got more tests going on. That's one reason. But maybe some who would be deathly ill, or some that would be documented to have the virus, but they're going to be okay. So according to Johns Hopkins, a five-day moving average, California, Utah, Arizona, North Carolina, Florida, Arkansas, and Texas have all logged increases in confirmed cases. New York City, the area hit hardest by the pandemic, seeing a drop in cases and deaths and plans, of course, as we know today, starting to reopen the economy in New York City, trying to get folks back to work and get things going again. Overall, the U.S. daily count of new coronavirus cases declining steadily in recent weeks. And again, keep in mind, part of this is we've got more testing going on. That's why we're probably going to see more such cases. So where do we stand on getting a vaccine? When will it be available? U.S. government helping several companies ramp up development of various possibles, trying to see if they're going to work and work safely. Can they be rolled out quickly? Dr. Fauci is saying by the beginning of 2021, we hope to have a couple hundred million doses of an effective vaccine. And yet there's still people saying we got to wait till the vaccine comes out. You want to keep our economy shut down through 2021? We can't do that. They're going to try to speed it up, but of course they got to be careful in speeding it up. He did say some vaccines could be mass-produced before the trials have been finished. We're going to start trying, he says, manufacturing doses of the vaccine way before we even know if that particular vaccine works. So we'll have it ready once we get the final clearance. We got a lot more to go on that front, obviously. In the meantime, New Zealand. New Zealand has no active coronavirus cases. No positive cases reported in the last 17 days. No one receiving treatment for COVID-19 the past 12 days, 40 days since the last case of community transmission of COVID-19 in New Zealand. So they're opening up their country faster and faster. And they're all excited about it. But of course they know they've got to be aware of what could be happening in the near future. Just like every flu season we have, sometimes a vaccine will be effective, sometimes it's not. We've had cases of 70,000 to 80,000, up to 90,000 dying from the flu over various years going back in history. We're now at 110,000 plus, I think, for this virus in the U.S., dead. If it affects you and your family, that's not just a number. It's someone that meant something to you, obviously. So we shouldn't be callous about 110,000 deaths, but we cannot continue to keep our country locked up. And after months at sea, the final cruise ship has finally docked. This ship, carrying up to 1,200 passengers, set sail on a 140-day world cruise from Hamburg, Germany, December 21st, 2019. Last December. In March, they had the virus catch up on the cruise, 36 passengers testing positive. When the ship had arrived in Western Australia, some of those were quarantined in local hospitals. Some stayed on board. Three who were on the ship have since died. Many were quarantined until their repatriation flights were available because they couldn't fly back to their countries because they didn't want anyone coming in right away. And then when they could, they flew home. All but eight. Eight passengers decided to travel back home via the ocean. Eight passengers on a cruise ship for 1,200. And, of course, once they dock and come home, the world's changed. Countries locked down, reopened, maybe locked down again, all while they were at sea. They're finally getting off the ship. They had an option to get off earlier, but they decided to go all the way. I guess they wanted their money's worth. There's another survey out that says Joe Biden is just beating the heck out of Donald Trump. Is that accurate? Is that correct? And then a cartoon character is now under fire, pun intended, as you hear the story a little bit later, and they're going to change this cartoon because they think it's no longer appropriate. Please stand by.
You can follow Larry on Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Time to
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
CNN has out a new survey, and according to this survey, Biden now has a 14-point lead on Donald Trump among registered voters. 14 points. And, of course, this most recent survey taken in the midst of the peaceful protests and the violent protests and rioting we've had across the nation. And in this survey, they also acknowledge more than 8 in 10 say the peaceful protests are justified. I agree. I'm in favor of peaceful protest. Upset with the death of George Floyd? Put me in the column that peaceful protest are justified. But the problem is, on the left, they want to take peaceful protest and rioting and put them together. Just as they want to take illegal immigration and legal immigration and match it together and just say immigration. And of that survey, 38% approve the way Trump is handling the presidency, 57% disapprove. And they say that's the worst approval rating since January 2019. Roughly on the par with approval ratings for Jimmy Carter and George H.W. Bush at this point in their re-election years, and both went on to lose the presidency after one term. Trump 14 points behind Biden. Staggering. Well, there's a closer look at that. SSRS conducting a poll. I'm sorry, that was the one conducted by for CNN, but it turns out, in a closer look at it, they did an oversample out of 1,259 U.S. adults, 1,100 registered voters, and there was an oversample of 250 black non-Hispanic respondents. That's a demographic that traditionally favors Democrats. So if you oversample, yeah, you're going to get numbers back like that. And you'd remember several of the so-called respected polls were doing similar stories in June 2016, showing Hillary Clinton was leading way ahead of Donald Trump at the time. In fact, the CNN poll from June 2016 showed Clinton leading Trump by 5 points. And who, I have a question for you. Riddle me this. Who ended up winning that 2016 election? What was wrong with the polls? We've had on previously, I may try to book him for tomorrow, Gerald Lomero. He's pointing out some of these polls are too heavily weighted, just like I said a moment ago. They're not properly weighted, so you're going to get false numbers like that. He said they know how to do them properly. They either don't want to or they don't care, or they're trying to put out a storyline, which is what CNN has bannered across its headline. CNN poll shows Biden with a 14-point lead over Trump. In other words, he has no chance. And let me see again, in 2016, when everybody said that Clinton was going to run right over Trump, who won that election? I remember. And then our political correctness stuff, the way we're going. Are you familiar? I'm sure many of you are. Elmer Fudd, cartoon character Elmer Fudd, is always hunting that wacky wabbit. Elmer Fudd is a hunter. He wears a hunting cap and always carrying his gun. He's looking for Bugs Bunny, that wacky wabbit. Going to get him. But he's carrying a gun. Political correctness now says, he shouldn't have a gun. Originally, Elmer Fudd carries a rifle trying to hunt down rabbits such as Bugs Bunny. But HBO is doing a reboot of the Looney Tunes cartoon features featuring Elmer Fudd, but no rifle. Oh, he's still hunting for that wacky wabbit, but now he's given a scythe. You know, something you could swing and cut down grass and grain with, maybe, depending on how sharp it is. Or you could take heads off with it. They'll let him carry that, but can't have a gun because a gun just not a good idea. I mean, they've decided now that he will be allowed to use a scythe and sticks of dynamite and booby traps and dropping heavy objects on Bugs Bunny, but the series executive producer telling the New York Times, we're not doing guns. We can do cartoony violence. The TNT, the Acme stuff, all that was kind of grandfathered in. So it's okay, folks. If you don't have a gun, Go for TNT. Now, of course, we know in the Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote always using trying to get the Roadrunner, he ends up often stepping onto his own explosive device and blowing up, and the Roadrunner gets away again. That's all good, but you can't carry a gun. You can be a hunter, but you're no longer allowed to go out with a rifle or a shotgun. So what is it? When deer season opens, of course, you could use a bow and arrow. A lot of guys are pretty good at that, and women. But no guns. If you're not using a bow and arrow, maybe a stick of dynamite. Maybe that's what they're suggesting. It's a cartoon, my God. And yet they are fearing that this will make kids think of using guns. And giving them an option to use dynamite and explosives, that won't give them an idea? What kind of wacky world are they living in? Political correctness. It'll kill us where guns won't, but that will. As always, I appreciate you listening. Please let your friends, neighbors, family, and even your enemies know we're on the air. We'll be back again tomorrow for you. Book it.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.